My guest today is Radars to the Sky. We're going to start by playing a track from a CD they brought in and then get into some interview and some live stuff. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Radars to the Sky. Hey guys, how's it going?
Good, how you doing?
Thanks for braving the whatever, the obstacles to get here.
That's all right.
Why don't we just start with introductions. Who are you and what do you bring to Radars to the Sky?
I'm Kate and I play keyboard and backup vocal.
And I'm Andrew and I'm the lead singer and play guitar.
Now, you guys have a pretty full textured sound. Is it just the two of you, or do you employ many different musicians in your live act?
We're missing the rest of the gang.
Yeah, they're all at work.
Yeah, exactly. We have Kenny, who plays drums, Martin plays bass, Seamus plays guitar, and then we also have a trumpet player and who's named Brent, and Matt plays the sax with us whenever we can get them out. So we're hoping to get them out as much
stage.
As possible.
Yeah.
Did the project start with all these elements, or was it start with just like one person and a guitar, and then you just kept adding these different layers?
Well, I'd played in bands for a long time and actually stopped to go back to law school and decided I was done with music, and then quickly realized that wasn't the case. So I met Kenny, who played drums, and then Kate and I had met and knew that she played keys, and we always like to sing together, so it's just kind of a natural evolution from there. And I'd played music with Martin forever, so once it got to the point where it was like, well, I guess this is a band now, then called Martin and found Seamus through our mutual love of the Archers of Loaf, and that was that.
All the important decisions in our lives are not the ones that we make. They're made for us, aren't they?
Exactly.
I love that idea of like trying to escape music and it sucks you back in.
Every time I think I'm out.
Exactly. All right, well, cool. Let's jump into a live song and then we'll get into some more of the process behind Radars to the Sky. Just for our audience's sake, sort of describe what we have in the room here, what you're going to be playing instrumentally.
I'm going to be playing my enormous keyboard, 88 keys. I don't even know how to pronounce this keyboard.
Your Elesis.
My Elesis that just fell on the floor and made a huge smacking noise.
So yes, we're very glad that it's very dramatic.
It was a very dramatic crash, so hopefully it will work.
And I'm playing a little acoustic guitar. This is my very first guitar. I got this when I was in like 10th grade and have yet to upgrade, but it's got sentimental value.
Wait, yeah, I want to hear about this real quick before we get into a live song. So was this, did you decide you wanted to play guitar and you went out and you bought this, or... Did a homeless man give this to you, or, you know?
No, yeah, went out and bought it. I was in about 10th grade, and some of the older guys that we hung around with played guitar and sang these, like, witty little songs, and me and a couple friends just thought that was, you know, the bee's knees, so we had to learn it, and so, of course, I did, like, the, okay, I'm going to make a D chord, and then strum
your fingers all gnarled around the guitar the right way.
Like, okay, I'm going to strum that for an hour and a half at a time to annoy the heck out of my parents. But yeah, then just went and got the guitar, and it's not a very good acoustic guitar. It's a Sigma guitar. I think it costs like $250, but I like the sound of it.
Does it feel weird when you play another guitar?
Well,
can you tell the difference in your fingers?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is that I don't play acoustic guitar very much, mm-hmm. which, like, times like this are fun because I kind of miss it. Even at home, I just play an electric because we have a baby, and so it doesn't wake her up as much. So I never really get a chance to play an acoustic. So that's the part that feels weird, these big fretboards and these big heavy strings.
Sure.
Sort of like, what am I doing here?
Do you feel like you're cheating on the guitar when you play another guitar?
A little bit. I feel a little guilty. I make sure I wash my hands really well. I come back, maybe a little lotion just to be sure.
You smell like that Fender. Okay, let's do this. What would you guys like to play first?
We're going to play a track called Proof Rock. It's on the brand new EP that we're putting out. We actually have an EP release show tomorrow night, so this is a track off of that.
All right,
it's based on a poem by T.S. Eliot.
Excellent. My guest is Radars to the Sky. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Now as we're walking down towards the beach, I hear the mermaids singing each to each. But I don't think that they will ever stop and sing for me. I'm ragged claws scuttling on the shores of silent seas, and as the putrid stench floats over you and me, before I muster up the nerve to ask, you turn and leave. I'm on bended knee. The crashing waves drown out all I say. And in a minute there is time to murder and create all of what my heart dictates. And in a minute there is time for visions and revisions. Time to lift and drop a question on your plate, like, will you stay forever, darling, in our sweet and tender world? While in my head the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. I just don't know how I will ever let you know. As we're walking back towards the beach, I hear the mermaids singing each to each. But I don't think that they will ever stop and sing for me. I'm ragged claws scuttling on the shores of silent seas, and as the putrid stench floats over you and me, before I muster up the nerve to ask, you turn and leave. But will you stay forever, darling, in our sweet and tender world? While in my head the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo.
just don't know how I will ever let you know. I talk too fast, I act too slow. Before I move, she turns to go, and everything just floats away.
Broken.
Sorry, yeah, one guy clapping doesn't sound very cool at all, but I just couldn't help myself. Yeah, give yourselves a big hand. That is such a great start to the show. I really like that. What I like about it is there's these two kind of competing sentiments. It's like Morrissey, but with a sense of humor. You know, it's like, you know, there's this sort of serious, you know, melodramatic singer-songwriter guy, but there's also this sort of, you know, happy keys. And tell me a little bit about that, about sort of finding the right sentiment for your music.
Well, that's funny because they always make fun of me for sometimes singing like Morrissey. Yeah. And so sometimes I sort of camp it up. So I think that actually kind of encapsulated. I mean, I grew up as a Smiths, Cure kind of kid. And then I went away to college and I, you know, got exposed to the Sonic Youth and the Pixies and Pavement, which tells you how old I am. I was already in college. And so I think that's kind of what you're describing a little bit, is those competing interests of like kind of bare your soul songwriting a la Morrissey and Robert Smith, with kind of the instinct to take a more whimsical view of the world.
Yeah, because it's not heavy. I mean, there's a certain element of fun, at least to that last song.
Yeah, well, I've always had a really hard time with writing lyrics that are happy, just because they always end up sort of being trite. And that song's about proposing to her. and I tried to write something like that for a while, and just it all made me want to barf because it was so just, you know, it's hard not to be trite. And then sort of went back. I was reading some old T.S. Eliot poems, and what I think is maybe the greatest poem in at least in the last like 100 years is The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. And it's hard to read, but I think that he's writing about trying to propose to somebody. And so I kind of figured that I could pull off the sentiment I was trying to get across without being sappy if I used his lyrics, because, hey, T.S. Eliot's not sappy.
Yeah, no one would accuse you of that. And if that's what that poem means to you, then that's what that poem means. You know,
that's
the beauty of poetry.
That's why an English major's not useful.
Exactly. So tell me about this whole idea, though, of drawing inspiration for writing from different sources. I mean, this last one was a combination of, you know, a story of something that you experienced in your own life and, you know, influenced through this poem. Is that how you sort of work in those abstract terms, or, I mean, do you like to write?
Well, it's interesting. Andrew actually writes his music before he writes the lyrics, so he comes up with all of the chords and the notes and the song, and then we'll practice it, and he'll be at practice kind of going, na, 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 not really singing any words, and then he puts the lyrics to a song later, which I think is an interesting process, because usually if I was going to write a song, it would be all about the lyrics first and then trying to find the notes to go along with it. So that's something I don't know if anybody really realizes about him.
Do you usually know what the song is about before you come up with the lyrics, or does that come from how the song puts itself together?
Yes and no. Sometimes, there's a song I'm kind of in the middle, quote unquote, in the middle of writing, and she's right, that's kind of my typical process. And the music is all done. I know exactly how the song goes, what all the parts are, but it only has one line right now. Like the very last line of the chorus, I know exactly what I want it to be, and I sort of know the general sentiment of what I want the song to be about, but lyrics tend to sort of torture me because I'm kind of, I don't know if insecure is the right word, or maybe just a perfectionist is the right word. So,
tend to write and rewrite and rewrite your songs?
Yeah, a lot. So, until I'm really happy with them. So yeah, I always have a like a backlog of three or four songs that are like fully formed, except for the fact that at practice I'm going
and then we get to make fun of him some more.
Right, which is really all that's my function.
That's
in
what
the
we
band.
Live for.
Is your home like a series of tunnels of just like unfinished songs? Do you have a lot of unfinished songs where you couldn't get it the way you wanted, so you just put it behind you? Or do you usually follow it through to the end eventually?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely are written songs that I just sort of, I just kind of abandon. I'm like, I never came up with the right lyrics for that, and I'm never going to, so. But yeah, there's a lot of just sort of sitting around going, okay, something's going to inspire me on this sooner or later, which I guess is sort of the really roundabout way of answering your initial question, which is, usually it takes for me to find something to kind of latch onto like that, you know, like with finding that poem that I thought kind of fit the sentiment mm-hmm. that I was going for. Usually there'll be kind of one moment like that where I mean, there's another song that's on this EP that's actually based on a poem that my mom wrote that she printed this little book of poems that's really cool. And so one poem I read and just kind of flashed into my mind this image, the one line, and then once I had that to grab onto, then I could sort of make it my own from there.
It's interesting because that is a very reverse process in many ways, because a lot of bands, particularly corporate bands, do this sort of like they start with a hook and then they build mm-hmm. a song around the hook, yeah. and you build a song and then you find out what the hook is in the song, and that's sort of what defines the song for you. That's a interesting process.
Yeah.
Let's listen to another track from a CD that you brought in. Yeah, we listen to the old album or the newer stuff?
No, let's pop in that new EP. We've got this brand new EP. We just got it mastered. And
just in time for our CD release party at Spaceland tomorrow night.
Awesome.
I think we're literally picking them up right before we go on stage. Yeah.
I don't actually
are people
going
to be able to buy them?
Hopefully someone will buy them.
Yeah.
That's why you have a burned copy there, because we still don't have them yet.
No, but it's a Kill Radio exclusive edition is what it is.
That's exactly
what track should I play?
Let's play track two from there.
All right, let's do this thing.
It's a song called Victoria.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is Radars to the Sky.
And on 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 and on
a hole to save. Remember, mine's just a bloody stain.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Radars to the Sky. So we were talking a little bit about the construction of this EP, and you're saying how it's got like a lot of different kinds of songs on it. You know, it's really common for bands to just sort of, you know, find out what their sound is and then recreate it over and over and over again. Like that's like Coldplay, I think, would be a good example. The band that does that, you know, they had something good and they're like, oh, we're really good at doing this thing. Let's only do that. But then you end up losing a big part of your fan base because you don't surprise or impress or evolve. How have you put a lot of thought into that in terms of like, you know, what is the sound of Radars to the Sky and what kind of boundaries or limits you might set for yourselves?
Well, definitely not in terms of boundaries or limits, but I think that the way that it's happened is there's probably two things going on. One, when the band started, it was definitely me bringing really fully formed songs with everybody's parts. I mean, initially I wrote everything out for Kate that she was going to do.
I'm a classically trained pianist and I never played keyboards before. And I mean, now I actually know how to switch all these different settings and that's been a big lesson, but I feel like I'm betraying the piano a little bit, like you were saying.
Sleeping around with that dirty keyboard.
It must be a much different animal to sort of think about changing the instrument while you're playing.
It's completely crazy. I almost feel like a DJ or something, or I feel more like a technician than a musician. But the reason why you see me on stage with all of my music written out, it's because, you know, you don't see the LA Philharmonic trying to do their thing without all their music in front of them. I need it in front of me just because that's how I operate, and it's really helpful having it's a crutch, I know, because I'm really jealous of musicians that can just go on and play by ear, and I can play by ear. I did it last night without any of the music in front of me because we forgot it at home, and it went fine.
But I think especially with keys and piano, though, it's a lot of it is about imagery. It's like seeing the notes in your head. So I could totally understand why you would want to literally see the notes there.
Yeah, it's a comfort zone. Andrew came to me and said, well, why don't you want to be in my band? I think I'm going to really do this again, and I can teach you how to play the keyboard. And I thought, all right, well, but here's my one. I need to see what you... So he handwrites every single piece.
But she's not giving herself enough credit because, like, what I was getting at was that more and more, she started to kind of write some of her own stuff. And we've had more and more parts where it's just kind of like, well, okay, I'm playing an E, so come up with something. And more and more, Seamus is coming up with his own parts. And he's brought a couple of songs, like the first song that you played on the record, Long Walk Home, that was a Seamus song, not one of my songs. And then another song that we can play that's on the new EP called Zurich is another one of his. And as we've sort of evolved into more of a collaborative effort, I think that's where, instead of, because my instinct, frankly, has always been to kind of worship at the Doug Marsh and Isaac Brock idol, and lots of like 6-minute multiple part songs. But not everyone in the band necessarily has that instinct, and so I think as we've kind of brought different influences, that's one of the reasons why we've kind of developed some different song styles. And then I think the second thing going on is I've become a little bit more comfortable with my voice. At first I thought that I needed to try to sing like I was in Built to Spill in order to sound cool. And I've only recently really started to become comfortable with like, no, actually singing pretty is okay. That doesn't make you lame.
You got to sound like you. You know, if you sound like you're, a lot of singers, you know, try to emulate someone that they really respect, and
like
they
the guy from Creed.
Yeah, that's so funny because that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. You know, where they kind of force the raspiness into their voice and they kind of like pull their Adam's apple down somehow.
Eddie Vedder ruined like an entire generation of
people who felt
men.
They had to sing just like him. And what you end up with is someone who, you know, kind of sort of sounds like someone else. But then you don't even listen to their music because it doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
Now, as a sort of collective of musicians in Radars to the Sky, do you see... do you guys kind of keep each other in check? I mean, are you aware of a Radars to the Sky sound? Even if it may be different kinds of songs, can you kind of tell if it's like, oh, you know what, this isn't a Radars to the Sky song. Let's not work on it this way. Let's make it more like us.
I think so. I think so now. I think in the beginning we were a little bit all over the place. But now I think I could pick out our sound. I don't know how we would describe it. How would you? It's your
music. I don't know how I would describe it, but definitely I think that's true that, you know, even across the disparate styles, I mean, like the first song that she and I just played, Proof Rock, like when it's recorded, like Seamus is playing this guitar lead line and his instinct is to sort of make things kind of like, well, like I said, he and I met on the basis of the fact that he liked the Archers of Loaf. So I was like, okay, you're in. And his instinct is to kind of give guitar lines that jagged edge. And so even though Proof Rock, as she and I sit here playing it on an acoustic guitar, kind of comes across maybe folky, like on the record, I think there's something about it that makes it sound like our band, even though it's very different from the song that comes after it on the record, probably because of those influences.
You guys ready to do another live song?
Yeah, let's do it.
What would you like to play?
This is a song called I Might. This is the first song on the new EP that we just finished up. This is where you get to hear her voice.
Cool. Whenever you're ready.
Because it's pretty. All the way and back again, I cursed myself as mouse not man. Could not recall her screams and cries, but tender hands and wounded eyes. When morning comes, the damage done, sneak out the door and swear once more I will not go back there, but I might. Yeah, I might. I might. Yeah, I might.
The rumble of each passing car, the tenor tone in a tender voice, the taste of bile at every call, the hope it's him, the fear destroys my will. He calls, he begs, I bend, he leaves, I tell myself again, I won't.
Through this, but I might.
That's why we call the show Is Good, folks. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
That was scary.
That was scary?
Because I don't have headphones on, so I couldn't hear. I think I was a little off key at first.
Sorry, I have a very loud voice.
I apologize for the beginning of that song. I think it was way off key. That's all right.
No, you're all right. You sounded great.
It always ends up okay.
Kate's nursing a cold, too.
Yeah.
So this is, this is really interesting. I've had quite a few married couples, bands in here who are married couples, and I'm wondering if there's maybe a reason why there are so many quality independent musicians that are in committed relationships with one another. And does it...
Because they're nuts.
Because they're insane. Totally. Or you guys run out of ways to communicate, so you start making music. And
you get bored quickly after you're married.
Yeah.
But I mean, seriously, like knowing each other really well, though, does that help like in a live performance, sort of being able to communicate non-verbally, you know, during a show?
I'd say... You know what's funny is that when Andrew and I are at practice, we are friends at practice. I don't even really we don't make out in front of the other band members. We're not this lovey-dovey couple, and because we're friends in that sense, when we're working together, it keeps things just
professionals.
He talks to me and tells me I'm screwing up just as much as he does to the other guys,
probably
and,
more,
and vice versa. Yeah, he picks
you
on
suck.
Me.
I'm like the
you're
dad.
Out of the band.
I'm like the dad whose kid is on the team who like is too hard on the kid so that people don't think he's cutting them any slack.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but which I think actually makes it work because we'd really separate our marriage from the band. If that makes sense.
Sure. Now, live performance and studio recording, especially in a band that has many different kinds of instrumentation, totally different animals. Is there one that you guys prefer more than another, live versus in studio?
I think vocally, I get more out of recording because I can do more. I don't have to use as much power to keep above the sound of the guys. So I enjoy that, but I'm starting to find my voice live as well, and they're letting me belt out some stuff, which... Originally, we didn't really know if we wanted that sound because I can have a kind of a loud I don't even know who you compare me to, but when I sing, it just is not exactly an indie rock sound. It's more of a, what would you say? Jump in, Andrew. Come on.
Oh, I don't know. He's thinking.
Yeah, it's
more of a classically trained pianist sound.
Exactly. Classically pianist singing.
Yeah. And what's nice about live now is that I'm able to do that. But originally, I think I enjoyed recording more. Just
and what about you, Andrew?
It's two really different things. It's like, you know, which of your kids do you love more? You know,
the first one. Well, no, I'm kidding. Right. I'm totally kidding.
I agree with that.
Are you two listening? But I get more, I think, intellectually out of recording because that's more challenging in terms of figuring out what sounds good here and mm-hmm. really I have a tendency, I think, because I mix a lot of the stuff that we do, and I have a tendency to be a little bit pedantic sometimes about it, and like, I mean, some of these songs are like the final version's like mix 9 something like that.
Are you also the producer of this album and everything? Or?
Some we actually recorded with a good friend of ours, Pete Min, that has a studio up in Eagle Rock who's great. So I would say he and I sort of co-produced it. We recorded all the basic tracks there, and then I did a lot of the overdubs at our practice space, and then he mixed the song, and then our friend Ethan, that's in a couple local bands, The Hard Goodbye and Ladies and Gents, he mixed one of the songs, and then I mixed the other. So it's kind of a collaborative effort. But that's more of the intellectual challenge is kind of the way I think of that, whereas the live is more of the visceral pleasure.
Right. And what kind of venues do you guys like to play in? Like big venues, small cafes? What do you think best, you know, works best for your kind of music?
I'd say, well, we've played all the venues have been sort of the same size, Echo and Spaceland, and we played once. We opened up for the Airborne Toxic event, our good friends at the Troubadour, and that was awesome because I'd been there over years and years seeing
it's
all
a huge
my
stage
bands. It's
yeah.
a big stage and it's a big crowd, and that we filled the room with our noise, and that was really satisfying. Definitely wet my whistle to try and do more larger ones, but
yeah, I mean, this is, we definitely are not
live with seven people on the stage, we're definitely not, we don't sound quite like this. So I think we probably do pretty well in rooms that have enough size to mm-hmm. accommodate two really loud guitars and
sure.
all the noise that we make.
Let's listen to another track from your CD.
Cool.
What do you recommend?
Go ahead and let's play song 4. It's called Zurich.
All right. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Radars to the Sky. MySpace.com/radars to the sky. Is that the place to go for all the latest up-to-date info on you guys?
Yeah, that's the website right okay. now.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Radars to the Sky. We were talking about live performance. What for you guys makes for great live performance and what makes for not so great one, technical considerations aside? Because everybody says, oh, well, as long as the equipment works or whatever. But I'm looking for something a little more abstract. Like, is it, you know, seeing if that the audience is into it, or is it knowing that you played the songs well?
The audience, we were playing in Fresno. We opened up for Rademacher in Fresno, and we were so excited because the place wasn't that packed, but there were people dancing throughout the entire set, which we don't get here in L.A. We get the L.A., what is it, the L.A. salute.
The L.A. salute. The folded arms.
Their arms and nods their head.
The head bob, yeah.
So it was so much fun playing a show where people were dancing our music that I don't think I've had that much fun since. So maybe kids at Spaceland will dance tomorrow night if they hear
this. Yeah, there really was something kind of electric about, I mean, yeah, like she said, there were probably, what, like a dozen people like dancing? But, like, it was cool. It's funny, the way we have been arranging our set, like the first few songs are kind of our more like dancey, poppy ones, and then we kind of transition into like the more like indie rock part of the set, for lack of a better term. And I think it was actually that last song that was next in the set, and the kids were like dancing. I remember, like, as the song ended, I kind of like leaned over to Seamus. I was like, start this one really fast so they don't stop dancing. So we like raced through the rest of the set, these songs that should have been more like mid-tempo, like jangly indie rock songs. We totally played them like dance songs.
I think it's that. So to answer your question, just for me, just feeding off what the crowd is doing, if I feel like they're actually listening and enjoying it, that is the best high, no matter whether or not, regardless if my keyboard breaks down or not, which it does often.
Well, I'm amazed that it survived that crash at the beginning of the morning here.
We should have gotten that on tape. That was good.
So what about when you think about what your audience is going to get from your music in terms of, you know, listening to the lyrics and listening to the songs? Like, what do you want from them when they take your CD home? Do you imagine them listening to it in the car, or do you picture them at a live performance dancing? What's the Radars to the Sky audience like?
Yeah. It's interesting because on the one hand, while that was really awesome to have people dancing to the music, that's definitely not kind of what I would perceive the music as. Like, I sort of think of it as put it on in your car and blast it and sort of listen. And it's, I don't know, what was it? Someone said, we play music for kids in pink shoes. You know, like for the indie rock kids in their pink shoes.
Interesting.
So I think to a large extent it's sort of meant to get the kid that likes music that's a little bit more cerebral, that kind of plays on some of those influences, like indie rock standard influences, and yet at the same time, as we've kind of evolved and embraced a little bit more of the straightforward, a little bit more poppy songwriting, like maybe you shake your booty at the same time a little bit too.
And on that note, why don't we go into another live song if you guys are ready?
Cool. Oh, that was a horrible transition then, because we'll play this song. This is called Basement. This is probably our most folky song. This is on our first EP.
All right, whenever you're ready. My guest is Radars to the Sky. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
You can shake your booty to this one. Every night it hits me lying alone in the dark that this world must surely end, since it clearly had a start. But I'll be damned if I'll go quiet. So this life, it must be finite, and I guess that's fine. But my instinct tries to fight it, holds out for more time. I won't be shy, I want more of mine. Still it's lonely in the basement of my heart. It's even lonelier without you here, my sweetheart. Circumstances dictate how this all ends up, from the start to the middle to a predetermined stop. Won't you let me off? It's a circle, she's a square, she's an electric chair, but then a blanket keep me warm. I don't know which one to compare. It just don't seem fair. Still it's cold here in the basement of my heart. It's even colder now without you here, my sweetheart. I take it all in stride as we rot inside from this lifelong strife. But it's clear the sun soon sets right here and we disappear. It wouldn't last this year. Still it's cold here in the basement of my heart. It's even colder now without you here, my sweetheart. Yeah, it's lonely in the basement of my heart. It's even lonelier without you here, my sweetheart. It's even lonelier without you here, my
sweetheart. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Radars to the Sky. You're going to give Death Cab for Cutie a run for their money with that one. That's a good song.
I'd like it noted for the record that I wrote that well before I Will Follow You Into the Dark.
I'm so terrified that at some point later today, because I'm listening to this in headphones, and the really good live performances on this show are the ones where I kind of forget that there's a live performance going on. I sort of get into that zone where it's like I'm listening to a CD, but you whispering sweetheart like into the microphone there, I'm so scared that later today it's me walking along the street and you're sweetheart.
It's scary.
I'm freaking out. In the song, it's beautiful, but outside of the song, I gotta make sure
she comes from nowhere.
Yeah, that would
you should
be
me. I hear that in my ears all the time.
Take out the trash, sweetheart.
So you guys just finished this EP. You're saying you're just gonna go pick it up and take it to Spaceland for your show tomorrow.
Yeah.
And what time is the show tomorrow at Spaceland? And who else is playing? Anybody know?
The Flying Tourbillon Orchestra is up first, and they're a new band, but they're really cool. We went and checked them out at Silver Lake Lounge recently, and they were great. And then the Henry Clay People are on next, and then we're playing third. We're on at 10:30, 11 or so. And then after us is the Hectors. So we got to put together the whole lineup, and we're really excited. It's a rare treat when you get to, like, honestly tell people, come to the whole show, because, like, really, the other bands are great.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying to do that with these good music shows. It's almost like people in LA are so conditioned to just show up for their friend, see the first song, kind of wave high and say I made it, and then take off. You know, and I've been guilty of that too in the past, because most shows are booked so sloppily that, you know, you go to see your friend's band and then the band after it.
Yeah.
You're not going to be a fan of that band. It's like nobody put any thought into the lineup. So when they allow bands to, you know, get their friends in there and everything, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, Flying Tourbillon Orchestra, sorry. I don't even know how to describe them. I try to describe it as sort of, imagine like the 88 sort of Elephant Six collective sensibility, but a little bit prettier even. They also have kind of a male-female singer thing going on, and then Henry Clay People are doing just, I don't know, Pavement Pixies. Just
yeah, I'm gonna have awesome. Them on the show in a few weeks, so
okay. We love them. We played a show with them on Halloween night where they came out and they were all in different president masks and came out and opened with like three different covers that were all like, I think there was Born in the USA and no, I can't remember, but they opened with like three total like America rah 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 songs. It blew my mind. It was really cool.
Awesome.
And then the Hectors, lead singer Corinne has just this gorgeous voice. Sounds like the
lead singer. She's in my car right now. I've been listening to
Sounds like maybe the Sundays, but then the music is sort of this combination of it. So there's really, it's, the whole show is going to be very cool.
This seems to be a growing trend in the indie scene, and a really positive one, of bands kind of allying themselves with other bands that they think are good and kind of, you know, working them into their shows and helping cross promote each other and everything like that. I guess that's, you know, it's really important to.
Yeah. It's really helpful, actually. I mean, if we think about it, we share a lockout with the Airborne Toxic event, and Andrew and Mikkel, the lead singer, go way, 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 way back. And they've been really good to us and have helped us, get started, really, because they were already blowing up and they helped us out a lot. And then we met all these other bands and we got respect from these other bands, and they all included us in their shows. And so it is, it's kind of like we have a nice little network now.
The thing is, too, that it's also kind of organic, because they're all, you know, it's a little group of friends, too, you know, and frankly, when you go out to shows in this side of town, like, half the people that are there are musicians in other bands.
Yeah.
And that's cool, because then you know everyone, and you know, like, okay, well, hey, there's... You know, there's Ethan. He's going to have a show, and we'll go check that out. And then we're hanging out watching this band, and then we're watching the Parson Redheads. But then we'll see them walking out of the practice studio like we did last night, and then we'll stop and talk. So it's more than just, ooh, you're another band. It's more like, you're really cool people, and I know I'll see you at Spaceland some other time watching some other band.
Yeah, and there's got to be a special value, too, in knowing that your fans are musicians themselves. That almost weighs a little bit more than someone who's not really into music and just, you know, oh, whatever's on is fine with me kind of person, you know.
If anyone compliments my guitar playing, if they play the guitar, I'm like, really? Thanks.
Did you hear the same thing?
I'm just playing octaves.
Before we run out of time, I really want to get into at least one more live song, if you guys are up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I don't think we figured out what we were going to play next. You get to choose. Do you want to hear something more kind of rocking, or do you want to hear something more kind of pretty?
Pretty. I like pretty.
You like pretty?
Okay. Yeah. We'll rock out with another track from the CD when we sign
up. We'll play a little Boy Made Out of Clay then.
Soon after all mistakes had been made, I met a boy who was made out of clay. He stuck his fingers into the lake, said, even though cold, you know, it's gonna break. And he said, I know that I must come home, even if that long swim breaks my bones. Him slowly quicken the pace, knew from the cold his brittle digits would break. At 300 yards his arm cracked and splayed, he struggled to hold that broken piece in place. And he said, the thing about being made out of clay, you break, but nothing's that hard to replace. He pulled arm and gritted his teeth. He pushed on to
Yeah, I met a boy made out of clay. He stuck his fingers into the lake. Said, even though cold, you know it's gonna take more to stop me than fear I might break.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Radars to the Sky. Guys, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's really cool having you in here.
It's
great to be here.
Remind
really
us again about your EP release show. That's tomorrow night.
Spaceland tomorrow night, which is Friday, December
7th.
7th.
And it's only $5 if you RSVP. So just go to myspace.com/radars to the sky and shoot us a message and get in for $5. Or you can try radars to the sky@gmail.com. Either way, I think it's like 8 at the door.
But is there a way to get Radars to the Sky music without leaving the house?
Both of the EPs will be up on, well, we'll have a link up on MySpace by next week to buy them. We don't have them up yet, but we're waiting for the physical copies, and then we'll have, cool. You can go check it out next week and get both of them.
And All right. You can play them now, too. You can listen to a couple songs.
Yeah, we got 6 songs up there, so you can check that out.
Sweet. Well, let's sign off with one more song. What do you recommend?
You got 6 minutes.
Yeah, sure.
Track 5.
All right.
It's called Big Bang.
That's the glory of internet radio.
you got all the time.
I determine if I have 6 minutes or not.
Well, thanks a lot for having us here. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yeah, that's okay.